From Entrepreneur Media, this is Problem Solvers, a show that solves entrepreneurs' toughest problems. I'm Jason Pfeiffer, editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine, and each week I take a problem that you're probably dealing with and get tactical solutions from people who have been there and solved that. So, let's get solving. Have you ever wondered if you're in the wrong position? Maybe you're a CEO and honestly, you should not be CEO. Or maybe you are not CEO and honestly, you should be. These are the kinds of questions that we often keep to ourselves. I mean, imagine saying it out loud. I am the CEO, but I really shouldn't be. I mean, that is a major ego blow. It could feel downright embarrassing. Who doesn't want to think of themselves as the leader? Also, who doesn't want to tell everyone who's leading them, or rather, also, who doesn't want to tell everyone who's following them that maybe they shouldn't? And conversely, who has the courage to step up and say, hey, I should be running this thing? Like, for real, you should step down so I can run this thing. People don't say stuff like that, but maybe they should. For evidence of this, I offer you these guys.
Hi, I'm Theo. I'm the CEO and co-founder of Moments Lab.
Hello, I'm Fred. I'm the other co-founder. We got a pretty similar voice. We're actually identical twins. And I'm CTO, so managing the tech team and product team at Moments Lab.
This is Phil and Fred Petitpont. They're identical twins. They are also French, if you couldn't pick that up from their accent or my earnest but probably terrible attempt to pronounce their last names.
It's Petitpont.
Petitpont. Phil is CEO, Fred is CTO. But here's the thing. When they started this company, those titles were reversed. Fred was CEO and Phil was CTO. And when they decided to switch titles, well, the response was not exactly what you'd expect. And it can tell you a lot about what's required to find the right role for you. And more importantly, the right way that you can serve your company. Because the thing you must remember, and the thing that Phil and Fred learned, is that this isn't about ego or titles or anything other than what's best for the company. And the more you're able to focus on that, the easier every other decision gets. But we'll get to all that. First, let's back up. These twins founded Moments Lab, and Moments Lab is pretty interesting. It is
a video discovery platform that is using AI to understand massive amount of video content. And we're helping journalists, producers to build video way faster using AI. So we're working with top US TV networks, post-production companies, so that instead of taking days to produce shows, they can do it in minutes.
So here's a use case for that. Imagine you're the producer on a reality TV show. You've filmed hundreds of hours of footage. Now you need to cut it all down to the truly interesting stuff that'll make the final cut of an episode. And this could have taken weeks before. But now, with Moments Lab technology, it can understand the video you took, identify the right moments, and give it to you, making production way faster. They now work with post-production companies that make lots of shows on Netflix and other streamers, as well as major US news outlets, sports outlets, and more. So how do these guys end up in the wrong roles at their company? That's just the first part of the story. Today on Problem Solvers, we're going to learn how Phil and Fred took on the wrong roles, what it took to get them to swap, and what everyone can learn about finding the right place at their company, and how much humility is required to get there. It's all coming up after the break. All right, I'm back with Phil and Fred Petitpont of Moments Lab. And to remind you, they are identical twin brothers. Phil is currently the CEO. Fred is the CTO. But wait, why did they start in the reverse positions?
I think that's a good question before explaining why we revert. Well, actually, it was a bit random, I think. So I used to work in TV and video engineering before. And so I projected myself as like the CTO and Fred the CEO because as a CTO, I was into technical video stuff and everything. And that was a terrible idea anyway, but we'll explain why. And then Fred was the first, I think, to leave the company, to leave his company to start the business. I followed him like a few weeks, months, remember, just after. So as the first one, you don't really ask yourself, I'm going to be the CEO. Because he really kicked up the company and everything, and I joined just after. So I think it was like maybe a natural choice, and we don't really ask ourselves who should do what based on our skills, what we love to do, and it was like a no-brainer decision, but not probably in a good no-brainer definition of it.
I mean, that sounds like startup life, right? I mean, everyone's got to do something, and you're not exactly thinking about how the decisions that you make at the very beginning are going to scale. You're just thinking about getting the thing going. So it makes sense. So Fred, you had left your old job first. You were therefore first to be full time into this, and therefore you were the CEO. Does that sound basically right?
Yeah, I mean, exactly. It sounds natural. I mean, you had to create everything from the ground. I mean, all the dirty work, paperwork and stuff like that. So you don't, I mean, ask yourself. I mean, it would be a nice question, but there are more important problems to solve before addressing that question. Mm-hmm. I mean, for us, it was like creating value for our customer. And actually, to continue the story, well, most of the customers and prospects were actually people Phil knew very well. So I was in a kind of situation where he was in a better position to actually do business because he had the connection. So every time I was going to those prospect and customers, first, of course, they were thinking I was Phil, which was kind of special at first. And then, I mean, the more important thing is business is kind of creating the connection, creating the relationship. And he had that network before, which is one thing I didn't have. And I had many things around AI, around big data, that kind of stuff, but I didn't have knowledge of this industry.
So how did you get to the point where you decided to switch?
Yeah, that's a really interesting story. So when you're hiring people early stage in a company, sometimes you are like asking for help to advisors or different freelancers that will help you finding people. And we started to work with a guy that is doing some kind of leadership profiling.
Okay.
We were about to hire our first sales rep. And we say, yeah, we want to make sure that we'll take the good decision. Then the guy said, okay, I will help you finding the sales rep you need. But first, I want to interview yourself, both of you, in two different times. And then I will ask you some questions. So this guy is a very unique guy. So we get interviews during half day, each one of us, separate meetings. And so this guy is asking many, many questions about yourself. Like he's kind of breaking your shell to kind of extract really who you are, what's your way of thinking, what's your comfort zone, what's not in your comfort zone. And then he's delivering kind of a report explaining what you like and what you don't like. Hmm. And then after a few, maybe 1 week or 10 days, he said, okay, Phil, Fred, I want to speak to you because there's something here. And then he explained that, well, actually, we have, of course, two different characters and like we're not acting the same. We have not the same behaviors. And he said, well, actually, you should revert your role because Fred is more like this, and Phil, you're more like that. That's what you like. That's what Fred's like. And actually, you are both doing something you don't like today, but you don't figure it out. And so,
how did that feel to hear?
Oh, it was a relief.
Yeah. It was a relief.
You used a word during just the preparation before, which is humility. And I think that's, I mean, we got that picture of the super founder, et cetera, but humility is key. And I think humility here was so natural. And you trust this guy. I mean, he is a former military. The whole interview process was really mind-breaking. It was like almost manipulation, you know? Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, you trust him, of course, because you deliver the most intimate detail to that guy. And then when he tells you that, well, he got a figure of authority, you know? And yeah, relief, I think it's a maybe good word. And I think we kind of had that feeling before. We had like that kind of perception that maybe it would have been better, but there were more important things to you know, to challenge or to solve. But actually solving this is solving many other things in the company.
You know, I want to tell you about the most memorable conversation I've had about shifting roles and see how you relate to it and how you don't. So the story is this. Years ago, I talked to Mark Randolph. Mark Randolph was the co-founder and first CEO of Netflix. And he co-founded that, of course, with Reed Hastings. And so they got this thing off the ground and it started to grow and then it started to plateau. And one day, Reed, the co-founder, comes into the office and says, hey, Mark, CEO, I would like to talk to you and show you a presentation. And Mark says, sure. So Reed launches into this presentation about the company and where it's going and so on. And the punchline of this presentation, which Mark thought was a strange presentation, he's like, where is this going? What is the point of this? The punchline of the presentation was that Mark, the CEO, should step down and shift into like a president role, and Reed should become the CEO. And Mark said that this felt like a punch to the gut, because he had always thought of himself as the big company CEO, the guy who would lead. And now he was being asked to essentially step aside so that his co-founder could lead. And he painted this picture of sitting there in the early Netflix office. I mean, we're talking really early days of Netflix here, and the lights shutting down around him. And then he went home and he had a glass of wine with his wife. And he came to this realization, which was that Reed was correct. And the reason that Reed was correct, he realized, was because Mark has a special skill. And that special skill, as he describes it, is turning an idea into a company and then getting that off the ground. But that is not the same skill as turning that company into a multi-billion dollar company. That's a different skill. Like, he is the startup guy, and Reed could be, and it turned out to be, the scale guy. And that there's not anything wrong with that. That's actually a great thing, because if you recognize what you're great at, then you can put yourself in a position to deliver greatness. And, he said that to me, and I came up with this line that I now use when I'm talking about this, which is, nobody ever said Shaquille O'Neal was a terrible basketball player because he couldn't shoot three-pointers, right? Like, it didn't matter that he couldn't shoot three-pointers. All that mattered is that he was really good at the thing he was really good at. And yet that took some time for Mark to come to, because, he was the CEO, and it's hard to give up the CEO role. It's interesting to hear both of you say this was just a relief. It seems like in some way or another, you both knew that you were in the wrong roles, but you either didn't think it was worth talking about, or didn't know how to, or maybe thought you might have been wrong. But I'm curious what you hear in that story about Mark Randolph, and what resonates and what doesn't.
I think one of the big differences is the connection we have with Fred. Mm-hmm.
You mean the connection you have as brothers?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so I think the beginning was probably the same. Like, there's a start of a relief when he was discussing with his wife the evening, probably he was feeling relief, was also saying that, yeah, actually someone might do a better job, and that's good for the company. And when you are dedicated for the company, wow, I think you're kind of okay with it. Then after, it's more like maybe asking yourself, did you take the good decision, or should you have done things differently? Which was, I think, on our case, very different, because we were very early stage. Huh? So it was like maybe after 2 or 3 years. So as a deep tech company, 2 or 3 years is not that much. And I think what Fred mentioned, like humility, we don't have a lot of ego. And so being able to see like Fred under the spotlight, or Fred seeing me more under the spotlight, we will be proud anyway. I'm super proud when he's doing some stuff, and I think it's the same for him. I don't like this idea of twins on singularity or whatever, but I think we want the same thing, and we're not looking after being famous or whatever. It's not something really we want. And because people are like all the time confused with who is who, I think it's like when Fred will be famous, I will be famous, and the opposite will be true. So even if it's not what we're looking for. But I think the no ego stuff is probably the most important thing. So I think the part of the story is probably similar, like being able to accept that someone can do a better job at what you're doing. And here we're speaking about CTO versus CEO, and both are very important. And to me, and for us, the CTO role was probably even more important than the CEO role at the time. So there was no really comparison, and there's no more comparison reason now. So I tend to say that it's probably easier for us.
Hmm. Yeah. Do you think that, well, first, Fred, anything to add there?
No, we say the same thing. Really the same thing, 100%.
Do you guys think that this would have been any more challenging if you had co-founded this company with someone other than each other?
That's a good question. For sure, we discussed about that. We discussed many times about that. But it would have been, I think, different. It would have been more difficult for that person because the connection we do have won't be exactly the same with that person. I think even if it was the same, figure yourself out with like two people exactly the same that understand each other, that don't really need to talk to understand themselves. I mean, I think that's what our wife would said. Actually, it's like, I mean, you guys are not communicating that much. And if there was a third person, that person would not really understand, I guess. It would be a bit slower to make sure that person understand everything. Mm-hmm. So I think it would have been harder. I'm not so sure, actually, the idea of co-founding a company with someone that you don't know before, I think is takes a lot of courage, takes a lot of risk. We're here, actually, the kind of connection we do have being twins help us raise money. It helped us in many times because this is a sign of stability.
Oh, that's interesting. You mean, so when you were talking to investors, they're looking at the two of you and they're thinking, this is a very strong partnership. There's no risk that these two are going to start fighting and hate each other. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, so Phil here. So I'm the one really like in the front line when it's about like fundraising. And there's a flip side of it. Many people are saying, wow, you are working with your brother? How is that possible? Mm. And actually it's either it's a very strong advantage, either it's the opposite. But actually at the very beginning of the company, the VCs were asking the question, wow, that's a risk. And now what VCs, so let's say our last round, actually our current VC says, well, to the new VC, to the lead one, they said, well, actually, it's an advantage. The founders are very close together, very strong. And when you see the reason of failure for startups, many times, I don't have the numbers, but maybe 30, 40%, I don't know, it's because of conflict between founders. And this is something that cannot happen with us. So that's why actually it's removing a risk here of crash for the company because a founder are very linked together.
Was there a challenge, or rather, there probably wasn't a challenge given the way in which you two seem to be able to work together. But then tell me what it was like after you made the role switch to adjust to the role switch. And did you have to do anything in particular to make that work or make that clear? I mean, even I'm just thinking, if there's a final decision to be made, it really falls to the CEO. And so then that final decision maker just shifted. Was there any adjustment that either of you had to make to feel that you best understood your relationship to this swap?
Fred, you want to take this one?
Yeah, Fred speaking here. I think, and officially, while the job title were not already swapped, kind of the mission were kind of already swapped. So I think it was more the way you look at it is not that much that you're changing so much the organization. It's more about how do you improve yourself? Mm. It's more about, you know, sometimes you figure out like a role model or inspirations and stuff like that. So you kind of look, you authorize yourself or doing things that you would not authorize yourself to do if you were CEO and not CTO, for example, or you say, no, this is what I should look like. This is, I'm listening to a lot of podcasts. So typically you listen to a different set of podcasts, you read different books to improve yourself. I think that's how I did it. Mm-hmm. And then train yourself, set different objectives, help yourself to say, okay, this is what you should do. This is where I think we're doing a lot. It's kind of when we do have meetings, preparing what he will say, how we would transition and how I would transition, et cetera, so we can have a bigger impact. And that doesn't matter whether you're CEO or CTO. I think, you know, the more we move on, when we think about like VP and C level, what matters is like that executive presence. I think it's key. And when you are hiring, I mean, post Series B here, we hired a new VP suite. And you can tell the difference. You can have very good managers, but a manager that has an executive presence typically doesn't need to be subject matter expert, could be a C-level, could be a VP, but as long as that person has integrity, energy, commitment, and that special thing, you know, I call executive presence, you can assume many different roles. CEO, yeah, though, is a bit different because you need to last in time. And I think it's slightly different, but still, I mean, that executive presence can, I think, to me, is more important than anything else.
What would you guys say? Let's zoom out here from your own story and turn, you know, for a moment as a kind of final phase here. What would you say to someone who feels like they're not sure they're in the right role? You had this nagging suspicion, both of you did, that you might not be in the right role, and you didn't really do anything about it until this guy kind of came out of nowhere and put you through these paces. What is your advice for recognizing whether you're not in the right role and then doing something about it?
I think it's super hard because first, when as a CEO, no one is sharing feedback with you. You don't have like on VC, on if VCs are doing it, it's like a bit biased. So I think it's like probably taking some holidays, not opening Slack on any emails during 7 days, mm-hmm, and then you will probably have the answer. But again, it's like we didn't really choose to run through leadership profiling. It was like probably serendipity, you know, and so we were lucky to have this. And I think it could be good sometimes, especially founder on some, you know, some VCs actually are asking for it to the founder to run leadership profiling after like or during the due diligence of a fundraising. And I think it should be a process that probably VCs should ask more often to run through the leadership profiling, because it's like it's not costing a lot of money. It's helping a lot the founder. For sure, because when you know where you are good at, then your life is going to be better and your work is going to be better. Mm-hmm. So looking for leadership profiling people, I think is a good way of like being able to maybe self-analyze in another way, asking ChatGPT, I am the good one to do it. I'm sure many people have run through this process. I don't know if it's working. This would be my first thing to do. Mm-hmm. But I think leadership profiling now is something that is pretty common, and that it's not therapist or, you know, it's a bit different, but that could be a good start. I think, you know, it's like 1 or 2 hours assessment, very quick to do. And if you don't learn, like, should you be the CEO or the CTO, you will learn probably some other good stuff. So I think it's not some losing some time to do this.
Fred?
Yeah, to quote that guy, actually, he had a kind of framework, you know, leadership framework. He's saying you're basically either like a king, a priest, or a prophet. So let's take this example that you're working, either you're a doctor or so on. If you are a prophet, you're like a researcher. Like, mm-hmm, you can't like heal people, but you can do research that will heal people in the long term. That's prophet. And that's not a CEO. You can be like a priest or a Mother Teresa, where you don't have a lot of resources, but you're here to help people. Mm-hmm. It's not a CEO. It's more like a profile of like head of sales, VP of sales, like meeting that where relation is your engine and motivation. Or you can be working at the ER, saving people in no time, taking quick decisions. That's the profile of a CEO. And if you like studying a long time, you know, the decision, how things are done, etc., or very analytic, that's probably more like the prophet. If you're more around like relationship building teams together, that's maybe more that second role. But mm-hmm, if you're a mix of both and taking super quick decision, that's more like you. I mean, it's not as easy as I say it, right? But you can roll out that kind of framework in any different situation. And I think, as Phil is saying, you know already, I mean, most people already have the answer before they know it. So taking a breath, taking a step back, humility, having a lot of humility against yourself is key to know. And then also to address and talk to your other co-founder. And to loop back to your example with Mark from Netflix.
Yeah.
Maybe his best decision as a CEO was to step down.
Yeah.
And give life to his vision.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly was. And he would say exactly that. I mean, the greatest thing that he did for Netflix, aside from co-found it, was to step aside in that moment, recognizing that somebody else was better suited for that phase of growth. And One of you said, I can't remember, that ultimately you have to do what is in the best interest of the company, not you, but in the company. And that requires a real appreciation that you, even if you are the current leader or if you are a co-founder, whatever role you have in a company, that your job is actually to serve the company. And sometimes the best thing that you can do for the company is do something that maybe feels like a hit to the ego, but that is ultimately what you know is the right thing for you and for the company. And so I think that your point that just like you guys, a lot of people probably know, they may not have embraced it, they may not want to talk about it, but they probably know that they're better suited for a different role at the company, that the next step is to just talk about it and take some action on it, because the end result is better for you and better for the company. And that's ultimately what you're there to do.
I agree. You can run being not in a good role for an hour, a year, maybe 2 years, but you're here for a marathon. So you got to make sure you can, you are in the right shoes, because otherwise your life is going to be a nightmare. And yeah, that's a marathon. It's not a sprint. You can be CEO for a year, but it's going to be maybe more, even more exhausting and not the good decision for the company if you're not feeling fulfilled to do that job.
Phil, Fred, this has been really great. I really appreciate you sharing this. And so interesting, really fascinating what Moments Lab is doing. And I am sure that now that people know about it, they're going to be watching their entertainment and thinking, how is this produced? And was it an army of people or was it just incredibly smart AI? Phil, Fred, Petitpont, did I do that right? Thank you so much for your time.
Yeah. Thanks for your time, Jason.
Thank you so much.
And that's our episode. Now let's keep the conversation going. I write a newsletter called One Thing Better, where each week I offer one new way to be successful and satisfied and build a career or company you love. You can find it at onethingbetter.email. That's a web address, just plug it into a browser, onethingbetter.email. And if you get one of those emails and reply, it goes straight to my inbox and I will get back to you. Problem Solvers comes out every Monday morning, so make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss an episode. The show is produced by Emily Holmes and Money News Network. My name is Jason Pfeiffer. See you next week.